equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Ettenayer, today's host for Equal Time Radio, and usually the host on Mondays. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. I have a blog called Relocalizing Vermont. It's at the Vermont Commons website. That's vtcommons.org. Just go to the homepage and click on the blog link, or go to vtcommons.org and then type in /blog. And audio of this show and the show that Travin hosts on Tuesdays is posted at equaltimeradio.com. I usually get my audio up about the end of the next day, so the end of Tuesday afternoon. You can look for the audio from today's show here. Got a great show coming up for you today. If you listen to Mark Johnson's show this morning, don't go tuning around the dial when I tell you where I'm broadcasting from. Yes, I'm broadcasting live from the Davis Center at UVM from the Future of Vermont Forum here, but Mark Johnson covered the event so thoroughly this morning, I expect I'm not going to say much about the event itself. I wanted to be here to participate in the forum, and Mark was kind enough to let me use the equipment so I don't have to zip back to Waterbury for a broadcast and then come here again. Saves time, saves gasoline, saves wear and tear on Vermont's roads. So I'm here at the forum. I'm talking with other guests at the forum, but mostly we'll just talk about their work, and fascinating work it is. Coming up in the last half of the show, the Vermont Folklife Center has just opened a new photography exhibit. It's called Almost Utopia, In Search of the Good Life in Mid-Century America. Executive Director Brent Bjorkman will describe the exhibit of photographs that a woman named Rebecca Lepkoff took of Helen and Scott Nearing and other early back-to-the-landers in Vermont, whom she got to know from 1950 or so onward. But first, how can public transportation like bus or rail connect people in a rural state like Vermont? Noelle McKay, who is the Executive Director of Smart Growth Vermont, describes their project to connect thinking about land use and transportation. Before we do that, though, I do want to cheat a little bit and talk about the report, which is called Imagining Vermont, Values and Vision for the Future, which is the center of today's forum on the future of Vermont. It was produced by this year-and-a-half-long study committee, went all over Vermont, listened to Vermonters, and you can download it at their website, which is www.futureofvermont.org. But there was just so much here that tied into the issues that we talk about on this show, on food, energy, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. I just wanted to read a couple excerpts from it here. In the section on the working landscape, agriculture and forestry, the report said, as they consider the future of agriculture, some farmers and observers believe that Vermont should aim to expand local production for local consumption. And that would address the issues of globalism, climate change, and peak oil. And under the energy section, they say, many Vermonters believe that the rise in oil prices and the instability of global markets, along with the science behind global climate change, mean that Vermont, the U.S., and the world face a fundamental transition in energy use and development that may entail drastic lifestyle changes for people everywhere. A Barrie resident claimed that, quote, we are in a different world than we have been. At several forums, participants framed one or another form of the argument that the car culture will end. In Hinesburg, a participant argued that we are not wired to react until there is a crisis, but it's here and it will be what he called a civilization-changing event. So some of the thoughts of Vermonters captured in the report, Imagining Vermont, Values and Vision for the Future, report on the Council of the Future of Vermont, available at their website. So these Equal Time shows seem to be right on the cutting edge of the future of Vermont, but longtime listeners already knew that, right? Right? Hope so. Anyway, now we're going to Noelle McKay. She's the executive director of Smart Growth Vermont, and I saw her last month at the State House. There's a working group once a week there on rural economic development, and transportation, land use are key issues for economic development. So we're going to be talking about that. She told us some amazing things about the connection between land use, transportation, and our unique form of democracy in Vermont. For example, she said, if you commute a lot, do you want to contribute to a planning board, etc., all these volunteer organizations that keep Vermont communities going at the end of the day? So we'll be talking about that sort of issue. But here's a couple things that the Imagining Vermont report says about some transportation options. For the individual, the cost of owning and operating a car can be steep. The council heard from residents on fixed incomes, including many seniors who could no longer drive into town on a regular basis. Young people testified that personal vehicles are more necessary to them growing up in rural areas than if they lived within easy access of subways, buses, and other forms of public transit. But these costs are prohibitive and limit the opportunities young people have to visit, study, work, or recreate beyond their own town. So, Noelle McKay, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And let me turn up your input. Try that again.
Thank you for having me.
Great. We can hear you now. So tell us, what is Smart Growth Vermont?
Smart Growth Vermont is a statewide nonprofit organization. We've been around for 10 years. We started off as the Vermont Forum on Sprawl, really trying to raise awareness about land use patterns and the impact that it has on the state. And we really work with both at the state level and local communities to really find ways to ensure that we enhance the landscape that Vermont is so well known for, compact villages surrounded by working landscape. So how do we make sure that we integrate new growth in with our cities? Think about issues like transportation, ensuring that our farmlands really remain working and viable, and introduce new economic opportunities into our communities as well.
And the laments of the rural people that were talked to by the participants in this report on how difficult it is to get around Vermont without a car and how expensive cars are, is that something you're accustomed to hearing?
Oh, definitely. We're seeing Vermont rise from 13 to about number 7 in terms of commuter and car time in cars. So our vehicle miles have increased, but also the time spent in the car, like you mentioned. So we're up to about 25 minutes commuting to and from work. So if you think about that, what impact that has on our communities. If you're in the car for an hour extra a day, do you really have time to volunteer at a PTA or at a planning commission or at your local library or for any kind of local community group? So it really has an impact on the fabric of the community as well. As cost, nationally right now, 2005, people were spending 21% of their income on transportation costs. That's second only to housing, and it's more than health, education, and food.
So 25 minutes each way, I mean, that doesn't sound all that bad compared to these huge traffic jams that we see in bigger city areas. How does that compare to the rest of the country?
Some communities, you know, you're seeing, if you're looking New York, New Jersey area, you know, people are commuting an hour plus one way. But for an area where, you know, you should be able to live and work fairly close proximity, 25 minutes one way is quite significant. And also we're spending more time getting to and from services. So grocery store, dropping off kids at play dates, all of that adds even more time in the car.
Where is it that Vermont ranks in terms of vehicle miles traveled per person?
I think we're number 7.
Number 7 in the country.
Yeah.
Is it around 18,000 per person per
year? I believe
year?
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty high. So
it is.
You figure in all those other things, the play
the
dates,
cost, the wear and
so on.
The wear and tear on the car, the cost of gas. And we need to think about that 21% was a national figure done in 2005. So that was before we reached $4 and $5 a gallon around the state. And you're seeing people starting to think about their transportation budget when they're thinking about where do we want to live. Because a lot of times that was not in our budgeting process, but it is becoming more and more part of the equation.
We're talking with Noelle McKay. She's Executive Director of Smart Growth Vermont. And if you'd like to call in and ask her a question, the local phone number is 244-1777. It's local to Waterbury, even though we're broadcasting from New York. From New York, Burlington, where'd that come from? We're broadcasting from Burlington, but if you're in the Waterbury area, use the local number. Otherwise, toll-free, 877-291-8255, and that applies to anybody listening in New York as well. Noelle, one of the things that we heard today was maybe not all that surprising that 98% of Vermonters say that they like the out of doors and the nature here in Vermont. And you know, you see that with where people live. They choose to live all over the landscape. But then that makes it more tough to do anything regarding transportation.
It does. When we talk about transportation options, people think about energy efficiency in their cars. They think about more bus and transit, but in order to make that possible, it's our underlying land use and the patterns that how we're developing our communities. And so when we work with communities, we ask them to think about, you know, where are you going to have your compact nodes? Because if we don't have some sort of compact nodes in our hamlets or villages or our small cities, we're not going to be able to have any type of efficiency in terms of transportation systems, whether it's carpooling or buses or small vans.
So given the settlement patterns that we have in Vermont right now, you know, what percentage of the population is potentially servable by viable public transportation options?
That's a really good question. I have to say, honestly, I'm not sure what that percentage is. But Vermont does have good bones. We do have compact villages. But the interesting thing is the land use trends in the last 20 years, we've seen more development in the rural areas and the suburban areas.
Did you say good bones?
Yes.
That sounds like a Got Milk type advertisement.
Probably is. We do have good. We still have that settlement pattern that we can make it work.
Okay.
And so looking at where we invest in our businesses, if you want to, we've got an aging population. Eventually they're going to want to move closer to services and not be far away. So how do we ensure that we create housing options in our downtowns, in our village centers, in a compact way, and make sure that we connect them with sidewalks or bike paths? Because a lot of times that's the last thing we're thinking of instead of the first with new development.
Mm-hmm. And have you been looking at imaginative ways of serving rural areas given the present distribution? For example, I was in a group last weekend that was talking about school buses or smart jitneys. Have you looked at those?
We're actually just starting a new project that we're looking to actually do some fundraising around, and really starting to look at what are the different options that we currently have in Vermont. And what we've seen is this pattern of somebody sees a need and they fund for, you know, their own van for, you know, to run veterans here and there, or to run school kids here and there. And we really need to figure out how can we optimize all of those vans and use them all the time instead of like 1 or 2 days a week. And I think that's something that is going to be to work here in Vermont. No, we're not going to see high speed rail, and we're not going to see subways. I think we're going to see more smaller, innovative community alternatives that we kind of link. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to look statewide at efficiencies. You know, how do we link all of these different agencies, county agencies that we have to ensure that if you go from, you know, Chittenden to Franklin to Addison, that those connect and mesh well.
I don't remember the state website for carpooling right now, but do you have that in your head? No. Okay. That seems to me like a place where it'd be a good place to go to see where people are looking for rides, and there may be a lot of people who are unconnected with each other who could be united by some sort of transportation like that.
Definitely. And there's actually a great system that Maine has. It's an online system, and we are getting that system.
Right.
If it's not already up now, it should be up soon. And that really helps link people. It's also to important to realize that folks have like an emergency out. So if somebody needs to get a ride, they've carpooled and they need to get a ride home because they've got a sick child or something going on, they can use this. And the state will kind of pick them up and give them a drive home. Interestingly, in the last several years, I was talking to someone at the Agency of Transportation. Very few people have actually used it.
I'm sorry, who
very
also?
Few people have actually used the ride home.
Okay.
So people actually find they can make it work.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones now. We have Dave on the line from Montpelier. Hello, Dave.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had one idea a few years ago that school buses travel to all kinds of remote points, and they sort of gather in a central location, and yet there seems to be some inherent resistance to using the school bus transit system as a local population-wide transit system. Would you care to comment on that? And is anybody doing anything with that at all? I'll take my answer off the line. Thank you.
Yeah, good question, Dave. Thank you.
There's not a lot of movement in Vermont. People are looking at it, but in a lot of cases, it's legal issues. So the school boards are worried about how they use their school buses for non-school activities and the liability that could incur for the school board. So that's really where the resistance is coming from. There is a couple of other states that are looking at some pilot projects, and that's something we're going to look into to see how they overcome those obstacles and how successful the programs are.
Now, another option, a variant on what Dave is suggesting, is to take the money the community would be spending on school buses, put it into public transportation, and give passes to the kids. Are there communities that do that?
Well, Burlington does that.
Okay.
You know, so Burlington uses the public transportation system to move kids around.
And is there any difficulty on the management, the budgetary side of things, and taking money from the school program and putting it into the general public transportation fund?
I have not heard of any issues.
Okay.
And I think sometimes some people are worried about safety issues, and that doesn't seem to be an issue either.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very good. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about while we're thinking about the land use patterns in Vermont is you mentioned high-speed rail is not an option here. And, you know, certainly there's not going to be high-speed rail from, Groton to Middlebury. There's maybe a possibility of some corridor of high-speed rail. But I'm wondering just about plain old pedestrian low-speed rail and what its history has been for passenger rail in Vermont. We see old rail beds that some of them are being torn up or have been torn up, but they go into places like Hardwick, and have they been served by passenger rail in the past?
They have in the past. We were a state, a nation of rail, and one of the concerns that a lot of groups have as we think about perhaps moving to rail again or going back to rail is a lot of our rail systems have been turned into trails, and to convert those back can be really expensive. We do have money in that has been designated for certain upgrades, and we need to kind of figure out how to pull that down and really utilize it. And there are certain corridors that have been upgraded, but others that haven't. So we need to look at making sure that the corridors connect as a whole, and you don't have a piece here that works and a piece there that works, because otherwise people aren't going to travel it. If it's not efficient and if they can't get there without maybe one change, they're just not going to take it.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Noelle McKay. She's the Executive Director of Smart Growth Vermont, and we're here broadcasting at the University of Vermont. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 244-1777, the local number for Waterbury, or toll-free from wherever, 877-291-8255. Now, at this group that I was with last weekend, Noelle, one of the people there was saying, you know, the jitney service, which is just a fancy or a different word for taxi cab, basically, ability to take other passengers for money, and I guess it has to do with having more than one passenger going to more than one different destination, that's illegal right now in Vermont. We already have private cars, we already have people going somewhere, and if the law were changed so that that was legal, then we could have all sorts of entrepreneurial possibilities for helping people to move from point A to point B without their own car, without a huge investment. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a great idea, and if you look at some in Africa, India, some of the Caribbean islands, you know, people stand on the street and you actually have jitneys that, and the same idea, private entrepreneurs that travel around and pick people up on main arteries. And so it's a great way to move people fairly quickly. Probably not that safely, because I've seen people sitting on roofs, and I don't think that would be allowed here. But it's a great thought. And I think that innovation is going to be the key in Vermont. We need to figure out how do we take the pieces that we have and make them into a cohesive whole. We need to figure out, as our caller from Montpelier said, how do we overcome like concern about, lawsuits, and really make efficient systems so that we can move people. And it is a social issue as well. You know, you talked about aging population and they can't drive as much. So we can get those folks to services, whether it's, you know, hospitals or doctor's appointments. But what happens if they want to go play cards with their friends or have dinner? Those opportunities to use public transportation really aren't there. And we don't want to isolate our populations. We really want to have the diversity integrated, because that really creates richness in our communities.
Are there any conversations at the statewide level about passing a law to legalize jitney services?
I have not heard or heard of anything recently, but the AARP is working with the Snelling Center, and they have brought a lot of different groups together, and they're going to be holding a forum in early June to really talk about what are our visions for mobilizing the public or moving people around, and then what policies at both the local, regional, and state level could be utilized to do just that and overcome some of these obstacles.
Well, that sounds like something we might want to find out more about and get another guest on the show for.
Oh, definitely. It's been a great process. We've been kind of the first level participants in developing this vision statement, and we're co-sponsoring the event in June.
So the name of your organization, Noelle McKay, is Smart Growth Vermont, and you started out by talking about how you're looking at growth in growth centers to keep people concentrated so it's easier for people to take advantage of public transportation options. On the other hand, a few weeks ago in the State House, in your presentation there, you talked about how slow growth is, and I guess we know the numbers, but it really brought it home to me. I think you were saying that the first quarter in Williston, normally one would expect 140 applications for new homes, and there was one?
Yes.
So I don't know how long this slowdown in housing is building is going to go on, but you know, given that we're coming off of a housing boom, we're in a bust, there's supposedly an oversupply of housing, then what does that imply for our opportunities in the future to put new housing where we want it?
Well, I think in terms of oversupply of housing nationally, that might be true. Vermont, not as much, especially in the more affordable range, so $250,000 and below. We really do have very limited options for a lot of people. But I think this is a great opportunity for us all to step back and say, what do we want our communities to look like? Where do we invest? You know, where do we? Which bridges do we fix? Which roads do we fix? Which rails do we fix? Where do we add sidewalks and bike? So I think this is now is the opportunity before we have all of these applications in front of our local planning and select boards to take a moment, step back, and figure out where we want growth to occur, how it's going to look, and how we're going to integrate the pieces.
And you've been thinking about that a fair amount in your organization. Why don't you tell people how to get in contact with you?
We're at smartgrowthvermont.org, and you can give us a call at 864-6310.
864-6310, and that's Smart Growth Vermont, spelled out.
Yes.
.org. Very good. And what are your plans? You're just starting or getting ready to go public? I guess with the show, you are going public. With you're thinking on connecting land use and transportation and in a more overall way. What are your plans for the future with that particular project?
Well, it's really going to start out with a research base. You know, what do we have? What are the gaps? Mm-hmm. What are some options and the pros and cons for those options? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people working on transportation options, so we really want to have that. Make sure we're all on the same page, because mm-hmm. I think everyone's got different levels of information, but communities need it boil down a little bit more, and that's really what we do and do well. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we'd like to do some, you know, looking at two pilot communities or regions on how they can take some of the recommendations from the report and actually turn them into on the ground policy changes.
And do you have those communities selected yet?
No, we don't, because we haven't. We need to get the lay of the land overall in the state. I'm guessing, just because of population, one of them will probably be the Chittenden area.
Mm. And communities don't know what they're in for quite yet, because you haven't done the report, so they don't know what the recommendations are. But if they're possibly interested in getting some help on transportation planning, would this be a time to contact you, or just hold off?
Well, I think we can hold off a little bit, but we actually help communities all the time. So we do workshops, we do trainings, we do one-on-one assistance. And so if folks are thinking about how do we integrate transportation into our town plans, we can help with that.
And you were saying a few weeks ago in the State House that the local zoning laws are some of the most important places to be channeling, working on to channel growth in the future to where you want it.
Definitely. And so often we talk about where we put housing and what the density is going to be, but we need to really look at how our communities are designed and how they're integrated. Because if you walk through communities in some of the villages you love so much, you need to kind of step back and say, why do I love being here? They're designed for people. They're not designed for cars. Yeah. Where doors and windows are situated, how it's landscaped, all makes a difference in really creating a community that people want to walk and bike in because they feel safe.
And we're just about out of time here. Anything else you'd like to add before we sign off here?
I think this is a time for a great opportunity to really look at the future of Vermont, just like we're doing here today in Burlington, the future of our communities, and how do we look at creative alternatives for how we move around outside of the car.
Very good. Noelle McKay, the Executive Director of Smart Growth Vermont, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be back in just a minute with Brent Bjorkman. He is the Executive Director of another Vermont organization, the Vermont Folk Life Center. And they're 25 years old this year. They've just opened a new photography exhibit called Almost Utopia, In Search of the Good Life in Mid-Century America. And we'll talk about photographs of Helen and Scott Nearing and other early Back to the Landers in Vermont. We'll be back just after this.